From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
If you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all right life. Peaches and cream.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, having made only one documentary, Sasha Gervasi was an unlikely choice to helm a feature film starring Anthony Hopkins and Helen Mirren. The director and producer Tom Pollock on the road to Hitchcock. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
I am joined by my co-banterer, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hello, John.
Hello, Kim.
So, John, the Leveson Report, which is this nearly 2,000-page document based on a lengthy investigation in England of the wrongdoing in the Rupert Murdoch newspaper world and beyond, kicked off by the phone hacking scandal, the alleged bribery that is still under investigation. You know, I should mention criminal investigations are still going on. But this report is a government look at everything that happened, and boy, does it come up with some unpleasant conclusions.
Yeah, and I think the best analogy is that the foxes were guarding the hen house, that the ability for the British press to monitor their own conduct was more than wanting. It's complete abandonment. And I'll quote from the introduction to the report, which says, "There have been too many times when chasing the story, parts of the press have acted as if its own code, which it wrote, simply did not exist." And what the report describes is a culture, and it's not just a couple of rogue reporters, it's a culture in which reporters were encouraged and rewarded to do whatever they needed to do to get a story. And I'll quote from a couple of people who were cited in the report, one saying, "If you've got people who are hacking phones and producing great stories, the honest reporter is thinking they're not in the same league, that something's wrong with them." Another person said, "There'd be no time to make calls and get things right. There was one time when I had to make up a quote. It was only once. I felt terrible, but I didn't have a choice, and I had to get the piece done."
I mean, making up a quote almost seems mild compared to some of the hacking that was done into people's phones. And, you know, this notion from as an American, you know, the idea that you have any kind of press regulation is very repugnant and scary. But when you see what happened in Britain and the lack of control, you do wonder what the answer is.
And I think that's the issue. And David Cameron, the prime minister, has already said that he's nervous about whatever press controls might be put in place. But it's clear that what's in place now doesn't work. And I think if the media in Britain is complaining about these restrictions, and obviously what happened at News of the World is not indicative of everything that happened in British media, but if they're complaining about what is going to happen to them, they only have themselves to blame.
Now, having said all of that, the report is almost gentle when it comes to the role of the people who ran this operation at the top, Rupert Murdoch and his son, James Murdoch. It does say that there are tons of questions and that it looks like something was very, very wrong, but it doesn't lash them in the way that one might expect given the rogue culture at these organizations that was approved from the very top.
I absolutely agree. And I think the Murdochs are probably very relieved that it didn't single them out by name specifically about misdoings. But again, it does say that there was a culture that was in place, especially at News of the World, and that culture was created by management, not by the reporters.
Now, many people have asked, you know, is this going to spread to the U.S.? And so far, we haven't found evidence of this kind of behavior in the U.S. But a person who's very much in the news business here in the U.S. is mentioned by name in this report, and that is one Piers Morgan, who is on CNN.
Yeah, he was an editor at News of the World, and he's quoted by another reporter in the report saying, quote, "I want that story at all costs. I don't care what you have to do to get that story." I should note that in the report, he didn't get a chance to rebut that accusation, but does not look very good for Piers Morgan right now.
No, the report alleges that he was aware of the hacking, that he had joked about it, but that, you know, he had never been shown to have ordered it. You know, Piers Morgan has always kind of scoffed at this when he's been asked about it, but it's becoming more in focus because of this report. And I wonder, he's got a new boss coming in at CNN, one Jeff Zucker, which, by the way, in and of itself is another huge news story in our media world.
Yeah, Jeff Zucker's been hired to take over CNN. And as As I'm sure you will say, he's got a somewhat spotty track record in entertainment, but I will say not a bad reputation in the news business.
I think you're kind, John, but Jeff Zucker is very well known. He ran NBC and NBC Universal. He had quite an ascent, and I know you're going to point out that he did great stuff at the Today Show when he was, you know, 14 or 15 years old or exceptionally young, whatever. But he presided over a really terrible run at NBC and NBC Universal. He supersized episodes, tried all sorts of tricks, the most famous being Jay Leno every night of the week at 10 o'clock in primetime. Disaster, which not only tanked the network's ratings even more than they were, but created this huge public fight with Conan O'Brien, which cost tens of millions of dollars to resolve. And I think what it points to, which is what the point I really want to make, is this is a guy who has managed up and who has done a lot of short-term thinking.
Yeah, and I will also add that his very brief turn producing Katie Couric's show does not set a great example. They pitched the show as a very topical news show. First episode had Jessica Simpson talking about her post-baby body. But that said, CNN has both a great brand and a huge crisis in that it's being eclipsed on the right by Fox News, on the left by MSNBC. People watch CNN at times of breaking news, elections, natural disasters. Zucker's main challenge is going to create consistent shows in the night and the day when there isn't big news. And I got to think he's going to come up with some interesting ideas, even if they ruffle some feathers within the newsroom.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
That's John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. And you can banter about Hollywood news on our Facebook page, KCRW's The Business. Coming up, how a guy who'd never made a narrative feature got to direct Hitchcock. The movie Hitchcock is a portrait of the relationship between the great director and his wife, Alma Revel. The two were creative collaborators throughout his career, but the film focuses on the period when they took a big creative and financial risk to make his classic suspense horror film, Psycho. Helen Mirren plays Alma and Anthony Hopkins plays Hitchcock.
Well, you better enjoy the pool, my dear, while you can. We might not have it much longer.
Why?
Paramount refuses to finance the movie.
Oh, Hitch, I'm so sorry.
You can't find the money, at least not fast enough.
Well, why not wait?
No. Just gonna have to go it alone. I'll go. Finance it ourselves.
Producer Tom Pollock is the former chairman of Universal Pictures. Now he runs the Montecito Picture Company with director Ivan Reitman. His company has produced such diverse movies as Old School, Up in the Air, Disturbia, and No Strings Attached. Some of those choices are more commercial than others. Hitchcock was always a gamble. And when it came to choosing a director, Pollock went out on a long limb. He got in touch with Sasha Gervasi, a screenwriter whose only directing experience was on the compelling 2008 documentary Anvil, The Story of Anvil. That film tells the story of two middle-aged heavy metal rockers who inspired many other more successful acts, but who had faded into obscurity. Still, they'd never given up hope.
I think the first song we ever wrote was called Fun Hang. Yeah.
We were trying to write a song about the Spanish Inquisition. We learned about it in history class. They would hang people up by their thumbs if they didn't take on Catholicism. So, you know, I figured, hey, there's a cool subject. Thumb hang.
Gervasi had taken quite a gamble himself in making Anvil. He financed the film out of his own pocket, and once it premiered at the Sundance Film Festival in 2008, he decided to keep taking chances.
We took it to Sundance, and it was so brilliantly received, but no one wanted to buy the film. So I then had to make the decision either to do a DVD deal and just get some of the money back, or to try and release it on my own, which was insane. I just spent 2 years making it, and I was mortgaged to the hilt to do that as it was. Then what I decided to do was I was like, screw it, I'm going to take it out. I'm just going to release it. So I gathered this team, and we released the film, and it was just the most wonderful experience. And this is where Tom Pollock comes in, because as Anvil was doing the awards sort of rounds two or three years ago, at the same time I think Tom's other film, Up in the Air, was doing it, I get this email out of the blue from Tom Pollock. And the email subject heading was, I hate heavy metal. And inside it said, but I loved your film and it moved me to tears.
Tom?
It was 2010.
2010.
And a screener came in. It was the first screener. And we're waiting for all the screeners to come.
For the awards season.
Yes, for the awards season. And the first screener comes, and I've never heard of the movie. It's called Anvil, The Story of Anvil. Well, I have nothing else to see. So I thought, all right, I better get a jump on the screeners. I actually thought it was a mockumentary when I started it, that it was Spinal Tap, and that this couldn't be true. This is, he's making this up about these two guys who are with their mundane jobs and their dream of having this happen. And when they go on stage in Tokyo and all those people are there and it's all coming true, for these old guys in the genre of heavy metal, I just start to cry. And when movies can do that, it's the filmmaker who has done that. And so I don't always write letters to filmmakers, but I...
Valentine's.
I did. I just wrote him and said, I hate heavy metal, but I really like this movie. You did a great job. Did you call me back?
I emailed you.
Either you emailed or called me.
Because remember that when I'd been at UCLA Film School, Tom Pollock had been one of the sort of iconic panelists. You know, I was there during the 90s. Tom, I think, was still at or had recently left Universal, which he'd run for so long. And I remember seeing him in one of these giant lecture halls, and I was one of the 2,000 students. it was a very bizarre thing to have, you know, Tom Pollock write this fan letter out of the blue thing.
And I knew Sasha as a writer. He had written Terminal for Steven Spielberg, and he was reasonably well-known as a writer, although we hadn't worked together, but... As a documentary filmmaker?
Out of left field.
Exactly. And it was such a surprise.
Before we move to the Hitchcock story, was Anvil a financial success for you? Did you manage to self-release to success in the end?
Well, I think, yeah, it was, in the sense that I got the money back. Not all of it, but nearly. But, you know, the things that I got from it, you could never buy.
And what was that?
Well, just the embrace from pretty much every musician and artist in the world. And I think when we won this British rock magazine's Film of the Year, and Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin came up and gave us the award, and Jimmy Page said to Lips, you know, keep on doing what you're doing because you're inspiring me. And we had the same experience when we ran into Paul McCartney. When you embark on doing something like this, you have to go in with your eyes open. I knew there was a large chance I could lose everything. But at a certain point, I just didn't care. I was like, at least I will have made a film that I feel utterly and completely represents me and I'm proud of.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the new movie Hitchcock with director Sasha Gervasi and producer Tom Pollock. Since Gervasi's only directing experience was making the documentary Anvil, Pollock had to make the case for hiring him.
Sasha had two things going for him. One was definitely Anvil. The other was, unbeknownst to him, what we were saying in our own meetings about the script that we had was that it really needed some creative work to do two things to it. In the balance between telling the story of the making of the movie Psycho and the relationship between Hitch and Alma, we wanted the balance to be more on the relationship between Hitch and Alma because that's where we were going to get the heart of the movie. And it also needed humor. It needed wit and a certain kind of droll wit that we always saw as being Hitchcockian in its drollness. Sasha, without knowing what we were looking for, actually in the meeting pitched both of those things to us. We bought him because his vision of the movie was what was our vision of the movie.
You know, at a certain level, the story is also about Hitchcock at the top of his game, risking his own money and everything to get a visceral connection with his audience. It was exactly what I'd done with Anvil. So I sort of had some small insight into that madness when you really want to connect with an audience and you're feeling frustrated by the system, as I was.
So we had Sasha do a rewrite in which he did all the things we talked about.
Right.
And then we set out on the journey to get our cast together. So the first one was Tony Hopkins.
Now, we have been told that you had an encounter with him many years earlier.
I did, I didn't really tell him that because I didn't think he was going to remember.
We set up a lunch. Well, that's the whole story. We set up a lunch at the grill. It was Sasha and I and his agents from UTA, Jeremy Zimmer and Jeremy Barber, and Tony. And we sat and talked about the script. It was all very polite. Zimmer went away, as I recall. Then Barbara went away.
And then you went away.
And then I went away.
Everybody went away.
Well, no,
just
because...
Just leaving me and Hopkins. Because what had happened was they were all there, and I basically had to sort of tell Tony what I thought, how I would shoot it, where I was coming from, the sort of references. And he was auditioning me, you know, and sitting there and listening to this first-time director. I will say that what made it easier and gave me at least some confidence was then when I walked in, the very first thing he said is, "I've seen Anvil 3 times.
Oh, that's a very nice thing.
What preceded this? So he'd seen Anvil. So
did you make him see Anvil?
No, it was a great coincidence that he had
seen it and actually loved it. And he said, "Well, I just watched it again with my wife Stella last night." And so he then said, "Well, how are the band?" And I said, "Well, they're doing great." He said, "Really?" I said, "Yeah, sure." So we ended up calling Lips from Anvil from the lunch. So it was this seminal cultural moment where Hannibal Lecter and the Godfather of speed metal were going at it for 15 minutes. And I was just like listening to this crazy conversation. So when I was pitching what I wanted to do, I had this sort of framework of, I felt confident in what I was saying. I felt like he was at least listening.
And you have to understand, for any movie to work, there has to be a bond of trust between a director and the star. I mean, that's true regardless of the fact, but it's especially true here when Tony, who is a legend, an Oscar winner, and the Lion in Winter,
right?
And there's this, and here's this young guy. Tony has to trust him with his career.
Right.
So what happened was I pitched everything that I felt was how to do the film. And then basically Tom left after the... And it was just me and Tony. And he looked at me and he said, "Do you really think you can do this?" And I said, "Yeah, I think I can." And he said, "Well, you know what? I think you're crazy and I think I'm going to do it with you." He said, he literally said, "I'm in. Let's go make this film together." And then what happened was I then sort of said to Tony, "You probably won't remember this, but we actually have met before." And it was 20 years ago in June of 1992. And the basic story, to keep it as simple as possible, was I had sort of, you know, my rock background. I'd been on the road with many bands. I'd got into a few trouble, drinking too much, a little too much of this and that, too many drugs. And I found myself in a sort of halfway house in the south of London, about 16 people, most of them coming, you know, in stream from Wandsworth and Brixton Prison. You know, it was really a humbling time, shall I say. And what would happen is that every Wednesday, someone from the outside world, whether it be an architect, a policeman, or so, you know, someone who'd had similar problems would sort of come in, have lunch with us and do a little chat and try and, you know, make us realize that this was a certain moment that could be transcended. And anyway, so I was asked to look after this particular guest one Wednesday. And I remember it was a horrible, rainy afternoon. And this taxi pulls up and this guy in a hat comes out, and I couldn't see. And he turns around, and it was Tony Hopkins, you know. And he was so, and he said, "Hello, Tony, great to meet you." And I brought him in, and we were all shocked. He had literally just won the Academy Award for Silence of the Lambs in February or March of that year. It was June. And we were all shocked to learn that he, you know, he too had sort of had a phase in his life where he'd had a really tough time. And, you know, he had lunch with us. And, you know, it was this sort of institutional British horrible lunch. And then we went up to this big room and all 16 of us sort of sat without blinking for 2 hours as he told us his own history. And he said, "Look, just trust me when I tell you, if you sort of recognize this moment for what it is and get past it, you know, you can get past it." And he said, "Anything is possible." So after I'd got the job to direct him in this film...
You didn't play that card before you got
the job. Well, I thought it was also, you know, it was not the point. You know, I wanted him to want to work with me as a filmmaker. But when after he'd said, "I'm in," I told him, "You won't remember." And actually, he didn't remember. And then finally, he remembered how horrible the lunch was. What he remembered was a terrible meal. And then, you know, what was great was that Tony, you know, then got incredibly emotional. And he gave me a big hug and he said, "Well, you know, well, this is meant to be then, isn't it?"
Coming up after a short break, Sasha Gervasi and producer Tom Pollock want their movie to be in the hunt for Oscar, but their star, Anthony Hopkins, has expressed utter contempt for campaigning. To make a comment about today's show, go to kcrw.com/thebusiness. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Hi, this is Darby Maloney, producer of The Business. Catch up with The Business and lots of film and television news on our Facebook page. Search for KCRW's The Business and click like.
I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. The new movie, Hitchcock, stars Anthony Hopkins as the master of suspense and Helen Mirren as his wife and collaborator, Alma Revel. The film follows Hitchcock after the success of North by Northwest, when he wanted to try something different. He was determined to make the book Psycho into an upscale horror film.
Why this one, Hitch? It's not just because so many people are saying no, is it?
Do you remember the fun we had when we started out all those years ago? We didn't have any money then, did we? We didn't have any time either, but we took risks. Do you remember? We experimented. We invented new ways of making pictures. Because we had to. I just want to feel that kind of freedom again.
Producer Tom Pollock and his partner in the Montecito Picture Company, director Ivan Reitman, were determined to make Hitchcock, but they wanted to work through a studio that would give it a strong push. Fox's Searchlight label is one of the few and the strongest in the art house game.
And Fox Searchlight, they were great. They wanted to do it, but of course, they're very tough, man. They're tough on deals. They won't pay anybody anything.
And on the other side, if you get lucky enough to have the movie released by them, they are the absolute best in the world.
Right.
And when we were putting it together,
that's
I remember
the
dream was, and I remember saying, it's like we're going to get Hopkins, Mirren, and Searchlight. Mm-hmm. And everyone told us, Searchlight will say, that sounds wonderful, see you at Toronto. That it was only going to be something they would consider acquiring. No one believed that this movie was going to get actually made with Tom and Ivan at Montecito and Searchlight. No one believed it.
And they would only do it if somebody else put up half the money. Now, we have a company called Cold Spring Pictures that co-finances, and we were always prepared to put up half the money under normal terms, but Fox Searchlight's idea of that is are much more, how should I say, rigorous, unfavorable. And they not only insisted on half the money, but half the money on their terms. But eventually, we gulped, Ivan and I, and said, very much like Hitch and Alma, well, if you like it, put your own money up.
And, so what were you gulping over, though? It wasn't the quantity of money, as I am.
No, it's the likelihood of getting it back. It's the
Fox comes first.
Yes.
And second, possibly. Maybe
without
third.
Going into the details right. of the deal, they're just much more onerous than other places. But as Sasha said, they are the best at distributing this kind of movie.
They're pretty much one of the very few options.
This movie had to hit very specific marks. It was a tightrope.
Right.
You had to get Anthony Hopkins.
Right. You had to
get Helen Mirren.
I got that.
You had to get Searchlight. And I will say artistically also, because I think that's an important part, is as much as what Tom is saying is from his perspective, obviously entirely true. From my perspective, as a first-time filmmaker with one documentary that people liked under my belt, the support that you get is just extraordinary. They are filmmakers pretending to be a film studio. From my point of view, obviously from Tom's point of view, they're
still a film studio. They are all of that.
But you know what? If I said I really want such and such, the artistic choice.
I am the producer. He is the director.
Yeah, but I have to say, Fox are the best I've ever encountered, ever. And I've worked as a writer on lots of movies.
He's just totally at the juncture of art and commerce with this
movie. Well, that's what it is.
That's always what it is. And I just want to point out the irony, and I hope it works out as well for us as it worked out for Hitch and Alma, and when they mortgaged, we didn't have to mortgage our house, but we did make this investment in the movie, and from an objective standpoint, it probably was a little crazy, but you got to do what you believe in, and we believed in it.
So, Tom, you are definitely a businessman, and you, and Montecito has made
lots of movies.
Up in the Air and things.
Old School.
You go highbrow, you go lowbrow.
Yes.
So what was it about this particular movie that made you so passionate, you and Ivan, that you were willing to just say, okay, fine, Fox, do what you will with us?
Well, we love the story from the beginning. There's no one in the movie business who is not in love with Alfred Hitchcock and the films of Alfred Hitchcock. I mean, it's just, there probably is no more important influence on everybody than Alfred Hitchcock. There are certainly other great filmmakers, Orson Welles and John Ford and Billy Wilder, but somehow Alfred Hitchcock, this movie is in all of his work, the critics generally rank Vertigo higher than Psycho, although Psycho's up there. But it is Psycho that has spawned, 1,000 horror movies. And what happens is you fall in love. This is as much as I like to think of myself as an analytical business person who looks at the upsides and the downsides. The fact is I'm just as much a romantic as everybody else. And there are times when you just fall in love. And we fell in love with this project. And when you fall in love with things, you don't always you find ways to talk yourself into doing it. And we fell in love with the movie, and we're still in love with the movie. And that's what happens.
And I have to say, a testament to Tom and Ivan together, because they made this decision. Look, I'm a young untried director who made this documentary. Great. No one in the business really cared about that. And they both fought for me. And I have to say that I know for a fact that you got calls from agents after the fact that I was hired as the director. And I know, because one agent told me, I called him up and said, what are you doing? You're completely crazy. He did Anvil. And they wanted to let me know what Tom had said, which was basically, yes, I know, it's crazy, and we're doing it. And that, to me, is like old school.
Well, I was going to say,
you know,
Tom.
And, and how can you not love that? Because to me, that's where you get a chance to make
Tom,
movies.
Tom, I was going
to
say, how that's almost gone from the business now, isn't it? With
yes,
the studios?
It's true. And I probably wasn't in my right mind but sometimes you just do. The heart wants what the heart wants.
And the key thing at the Montecito, by the way, for any young filmmakers going out to meet Montecito, the key thing is to drop ecstasy tablets into their coffee during the meeting, which is clearly what I did.
Now, I have to ask you, you may not find this as funny as I did, but your star, Mr. Hopkins, gave an interview in the Huffington Post where he talked about his, I just want to say, they're pointing. Sasha's taken this one.
Yeah, no, because I talked to him.
We talked about it last night when we read it.
Okay, let me read this to you. I want to read this so our audience can have the benefit.
Yeah.
So he is scorning the idea of campaigning for Oscar, and the quote is, "Kissing the backside of the authorities that can make it or break it. I can't stand all that. I find it nauseating to watch, and I think it's disgusting to behold people groveling around and kissing the backsides of famous producers and all that. It makes me want to throw up. It really does."
My response to that is, do people know he's from Wales? This is what Welsh people do. They rail against stuff.
Oh,
they're
no,
from the
we're
valleys.
Welsh stereotyping on our
show.
No,
I think, Tony is passionate. Look, he's 74 years old. He's done it all. He was Laurence Olivier's understudy. And what he's basically saying is he doesn't want to go round and, like, kiss people's asses. Good for him. You know, he wants the work to stand on its own. He's so bloody amazing in the film. And I think what he's saying is, watch the film. Judge for yourself. Don't make it about a political campaign. Make it about the actual movie and what you think
of
the performance.
Okay, Tom, as a producer, how do you feel about that? Because obviously everybody wants their stars to campaign.
I think he's absolutely right in what he said. I wish he had put it a little differently. because there is a right way and a wrong way to campaign for the Oscar. I don't actually care whether he campaigns for the Oscar. I'm an Academy member. I don't vote based on the campaigning. I vote based on the work, and that's what I think. For me, the most important thing in any Oscar campaign is to get the members to see the movie, preferably to see the movie in a theater with other people, especially this one, which is funnier than you think it's going to be. It's better when there are people around you laughing. He's right when he says, it's about the work, and it should be about the work, not about asking people to award you for your work. And that's, I think he's right.
Tom Pollock is a producer on Hitchcock. Sasha Gervasi is the director of the film. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Kim.
And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can listen to us anytime on demand with the KCRW smartphone apps. And you can hear the podcast wherever you download podcasts. The show is produced and distributed by KCRW. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.